This week's episode of This Is Only a Test is made possible by TripleByte. Applying to programming jobs sucks. From endless applications to countless hours of technical screens. With TripleByte, there's a better way. You do one online interview, and then you go straight to final interviews at hundreds of companies, from tech giants like Dropbox to exciting startups. It's like the common app for software engineers. No resume needed. Apply now at TripleByte.com/test. And if you take a job through TripleByte, they'll offer you a $1,000 signing bonus. Once again, that's TripleByte, BYTE.com/test.
Hey, let's start the show.
For Thursday, January 17th, 2019. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. Hello and welcome to this week's episode. Oh my goodness, I have the bad headphones again, but I'm going to deal with it. You guys don't know this, but all of last week's episode, I was wearing the headphones, and both for Still Entitled and for This Only Test, headphones in which the left and right signals would bounce back and forth.
No, are you sure it's not your ears?
And maybe that's it. And maybe this is something we can fix with our special guest today, because not only do we have Jeremy Williams today on the podcast.
Hi, Norm.
But we also have, sitting in for Kishore, we have Zach Ratting.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
You build cool stuff.
Occasionally I do.
That's your company. Can you fix crappy, mediocre stuff like this headphone?
Maybe. We can take a look at it. I brought my soldering iron.
So it's not going to help me mid-podcast. I'm just going to unwear one side. That sounds really weird.
No, don't do that.
Now I can't hear
myself. That would drive me crazy. I think it's very admirable of you to push through this show. Oh, the show must go on. I would have to stop.
You would have to stop?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thankfully, it sounds like you guys don't have that problem.
No, I feel great.
How are you guys doing? What's been going on this past week?
I'm doing great. This morning, I'm enjoying a new coffee that is delightful. Can I give a shout out to this coffee?
Please.
This is, Cable Car Coffee, and I guess it's a San Francisco-based coffee company. This is the Cafe de Ola flavor. Let me tell you what's in this thing. It's got coffee, and it has water. And in addition to that,
That's not very interesting.
It also has brown sugar, cinnamon, orange peel, and star anise.
Star anise.
Thank you.
Star anise is one of the five spices of Chinese five spice.
This is delicious.
Can I smell it?
Yes.
We become
Ooh,
a
that smells that a smells good. Show. That smells strong.
I do.
I would even let you taste it if you'd like to take
that's
a sip.
Okay. I don't. I will say that when I make coffee, because I now have to have coffee every morning at home, I have a Zojirushi coffee maker that makes, I think, like 10 cups, not actual physical cups, but 10, you know, measuring cups.
Yeah.
And the best part about it is that I can time it to start in the morning. I can prep it at night before. And time it to start at 7 a.m.
It's a coffee maker.
It's a coffee maker.
They do that.
I know. I never use that feature because I would just I would have the time previously to having a child to just make the coffee and enjoy the process. And now I let it sit overnight and let it start on its own. But it's wonderful. My point was that when I make the coffee now, I do add not only the coffee grounds, but I do add a little bit of cinnamon into the coffee grounds. It takes the edge off the acidity a little bit.
I love it.
I don't know if that's kosher with coffee aficionados to do that.
If you like it.
It works for me.
That's it.
Maybe it's a placebo effect, but I've just been accustomed to tapping a little bit, sprinkling of cinnamon.
Try some orange peel and some star anise next time.
Yeah. All right. Zach, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
It's been a while since we've had you on the podcast.
It has. We had a little interaction toward the maybe end or middle of last year, but it has been lots of new toys.
Well,
on the set.
You've been on Tested though.
I have.
You were a big part of the Star-Lord series,
which was super fun.
On Bits to Atoms.
That's what you're talking about. Middle of last year, and we can recap a little bit of that for people who have not seen the series. But Zach, you were instrumental, I would say, in Jeremy and Sean's project and Other Ocean's project of putting together
it was a great
this
team.
Arcade
it
cabinet. Was... And for it was a learning experience. I think we you guys approached it as learning, you know, how to build a cabinet, and part of that was fabrication. Zach, you have a great shop, and you generously let the guys use your CNC and help with some of the engineering.
He has a massive CNC machine, and in fact, the dimensions of the top of the table were based on the width of it.
Yeah, we pushed it to the limits, and yeah. And it was super fun. I totally loved it, and I love having, you know, people to collaborate with. So that was super fun.
Yeah, thank you, Zach.
Oh, you're welcome.
I mean, I think a lot of the I was there for on set for two of the days where you guys were filming. A lot of the fun stuff was Sean came in. He had because he's 3D printing
right.
as his fabrication expertise, area of expertise. And so for cam work, he had to kind of reconfigure his brain, and he came in with some schematics, and you worked with him over the shoulder on the computer to
well,
talk
actually,
about...
Well, actually, on camera, there was maybe a couple days, but that was actually, you know, a month or two of kind of pre-work going back and forth over email and a couple phone calls, and, you know, we had a couple minutes in a cafe where we were kind of, you know, napkin sketching, and it was a lot of fun, and you know, I really like to, you know, see how other people approach design, and Sean is... you know, has this great aesthetic, and, you know, being able to kind of capture that in a different form and kind of give him different tools to work with was great.
And everything was functional, like the way the pieces came together, that expertise, and also like things like just the cup holder aspect,
oh, yeah.
right? Like the talks you guys had about how to build a cabinet, because if you haven't seen this, it is a six-player hexagonal cabinet that almost is like it's not a stand-up, it is a cocktail cabinet.
Well, it was intended to be, but then it turned out to be a pretty good stand-up game too.
Right, but it's not like a traditional
no.
stand-up cabinet. It's more, can I would say, to a cocktail cabinet. I
mean, yeah.
For a cocktail cabinet, you need to have a place to put your drinks.
Absolutely.
And so they're cup holders for each player's spot, the angle and the way those sleeves fit in.
It was one of those... It was
beautiful.
Yeah, you know, you kind of looked at it and you went, oh, well, yeah, of course you need a cup holder here. And then when we sort of look at how complicated when you start adding angles and curves and, you know, these different things and have to make sure that it's waterproof so that you don't, you know, drip your, you know, cold beer into your electronics, it became a fun little challenge, just that part.
So Zach's saying you have to consider all those things in addition to having to cut it out using a single direction drill bit. That only gives you basically a right angle perpendicular
absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
edge, which it turns out to be a really big challenge.
So you guys didn't use jigs at all for mounting an angle.
The whole thing, it's sort of self-jigged. So the design itself came together and set all the angles by its own design. So that was a fun way to kind of put it together. And that way, if you take it apart, it goes together the same way,
right.
which it needs to for moving. So, yeah.
It was the highlight of my year.
Oh.
Yeah. That was awesome.
Well, hopefully you guys are going to collaborate more on future projects, whether for Tested or just in your off time.
And that's the plan.
That is the plan.
Oh, it sounds like a good plan.
Teaser.
Hey, let's talk about our...
Top story this week.
Our top story this week, even though we are 1 week past CES, does not come from CES, but long anticipated. It is more of a pop culture story. You know, some of our listeners out there, they enjoy this segment. They enjoy, Jeremy, the comic-splaining part of the podcast.
Yeah, how many people, though? Is that a vocal minority?
Yeah. Very vocal. Probably a minority of people. But it's going to happen anyway, because our top story is a new trailer from the MCU.
Is it?
It is. It's the first trailer, and it is from the MCU.
Okay.
What?
I thought that
it's not a Spider-Man.
Was a Sony Spider-Man thing.
Oh, let's go back. Let's take a step back.
Right.
Do you remember back in 2015 with the big Sony hack?
Yeah.
North Korea Sony hack?
Uh-huh.
It was leaked in those emails when Amy Pascal was running Sony that back then, seeds were already in place for Sony, which does have the rights for Spider-Man movies, to work with Disney and Marvel Studios in some way to share the characters.
They did that, but the original Homecoming was not part of the MCU, was it?
It was.
Oh.
That was the trade.
So I didn't get
that. You got Spider-Man for Civil War.
Yeah.
Which, if you're into comics, you know, it was a great introduction to the character, whether Spider-Man was necessary as a character and whether it was true to the characterization of what Spider-Man's role was in the Civil War comics. I think less so, but... great introduction, did gangbusters, and then the trade was then Tony Stark would be a guest and pretty featured in Homecoming,
right?
Which he was.
Yeah, I get that. I just didn't think they officially considered it.
It is
that,
officially in the
that
MCU.
Would require the big wigs over at the MCU to really have
they do
control over the Sony picture.
And that's exactly what's going on. This is a Marvel Studios picture, whereas Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is partnership with Marvel Entertainment.
Yeah.
And that's what you saw when you see Venom. It's not that classic the montage of MCU characters in the beginning with the music cue. All you see is the Marvel logo, and it's kind of really bad font, like in partnership with Marvel Entertainment.
Yeah.
The Spider-Man live action movie, unlike Into the Spider-Verse, is actually an MCU movie produced by Marvel Studios with the same art team.
Got it.
With the same producers, and Sony, all they've done is retain the rights and the monies.
So this is Spider-Man Far From Home.
Far From Home, which is a riff off of Homecoming. I guess home is a big theme for this take. Tom Holland back as Spider-Man. The trailer is out right now, which is what we're talking about. Now, this trailer was anticipated. There's rumblings online of whether it would drop after Endgame,
right?
Avengers Endgame, or people actually thought it was going to be released right alongside Endgame, and it would be like a 1-2 punch. You'd watch the Endgame trailer, and then you'd watch the Spider-Man trailer, and then it would spark a lot of discussion online, but it really feels like it's a standalone thing.
Mm-hmm. The fact that they were so secretive just with the title Endgame, it's sort of like, okay, they really don't want to give anything away. So.
Yeah, and for this one, you know, they had released photos of Spider-Man in his new costume. Sony's marketing efforts may be a little bit different than Disney's, but there are questions to be had. And to be potentially answered on this podcast.
We're not concerned about spoilers, are we? I mean, like spoiling the trailer for the listeners?
I'm not concerned about that.
It's a trailer.
It's a trailer.
Good.
It's going to help sell the movie. We don't know the answers. We can say definitively, the three people in this room right now,
We do not know
anything about this other than what we've seen in this footage and you know, reading the rumblings online. So, Far From Home, the set established, it is Spider-Man, Peter Parker and his classmates, as established in the first film, on a summer vacation trip in Europe.
Aww.
And
he leaves his suit at home.
He leaves the suit at home. Spider-Man is now an established hero in New York. At the end of Homecoming, if you haven't seen, I believe it was the post-credit stinger or one of the mid-credit stinger, Aunt May finds out that Peter Parker is Spider-Man, and so that's a conscious decision for them not to play with the Aunt May, naive Aunt May, which I think is a smart thing to do because she's such a great character, or has a lot of potential to be a great character as well in the films. So the trailer starts off with Spider-Man being celebrated in New York with Aunt May. He goes on summer vacation. Chaos happens, and he runs into a familiar MCU character. His first encounter with one Nicholas Fury,
who's not been de-aged in this one.
Not in this one. So we got two Nick Fury featured roles.
Exactly.
Probably three if he's in Endgame.
Because he's a big part of Captain Marvel.
Yes. Yeah. He's a co-star. He's one of the leads in Captain Marvel. So he's on vacation. Nick Fury recruits him. There's some dialogue which we'll get to that you can kind of pick apart. There is an attack. You see these creatures, one made of sand / stone, one made of water. Looks like there's one made of fire, very elemental.
Oh.
And then there is...
Looks very Fantastic Four.
Yes, a little bit. Then there is an appearance of the villain, the main villain, presumably, in this film, played by Jake Gyllenhaal.
He's a villain?
Who's Mysterio.
A good guy.
Well,
you don't want any part of this, he says. Right? And he's like trying
The character is Mysterio, for sure. That's the name of the character.
Okay.
In the comic books, he is a villain.
Oh.
He is a famous one of Spider-Man's rogues. He is a villain that has been very difficult to adapt on screen because of the character design. He wears basically a fishbowl on his head. But in a world where we can have an Aquaman movie where one of the villains, Black Manta, has what looks like a Martian spacesuit or spaceship on his head.
Different world.
we can live with the MCU in which a character, villain or hero or anti-hero, has basically a fish dome. So Mysterio in the comics
he does not look like the villain in this trailer. You got to agree with me there, right? Like if you knew nothing,
you would not say villain.
Imagine,
he doesn't read.
Imagine you're me.
I think you are playing exactly to what Marvel wants.
He's fighting the monster from the ocean.
He teleports in some way, And he says, you don't want any part of this.
Yeah.
And then he fights the monster in the ocean.
Yeah.
And his powers, it looks like he can fly. It looks like he can cast some type of magic. It's very reminiscent of the Doctor Strange magic.
It's like Thor mixed with Iron Man.
Well, that's the line in the movie.
Right.
That's what Flash Thompson, or not, that's what one of the kids says.
Yeah.
But as portrayed, it does aesthetically, the special effects looks a little more like Doctor Strange
with those
glyphs that float in air
on those
virtual planes. Now, in the comics, a little bit of backstory, Mysterio, his power is he's a master of illusion. He doesn't have any superpowers, not
really,
in the sense that they're mystical powers, mm-hmm. but he creates illusion, smoke effects, and fake, like, he's like basically a magician,
uh-huh.
a superpowered evil magician.
I think you might be mistaken. I don't think this is Mysterio because
he's
definitely flying. He's definitely shooting.
He's got
beams.
Some powers.
Google Mysterio on your on your laptop because this is it's Jake Gyllenhaal has it's been out. He's Mysterio.
Okay,
I like that you're arguing with Norm on this. Like,
yeah. No. I love that Norm might be mistaken about comics.
No.
That makes me laugh.
No, not possible. Not in this sense. Not in this case. But I will say, one of Mysterio's MOs in the comic,
uh-huh.
one of his operating procedures is creating false villainy to fight against to portray himself as the hero.
Oh, this is good. Wow, that's great. Yeah, I've been tricked.
You've been tricked.
By Mysterio.
Yes. So he creates the illusion. Whatever power he has.
Yeah.
He creates these villains, false
he's
threats.
He's a con man.
Maybe the villains are conjured by him.
That's exactly how it is in the comics.
Yeah,
he conjures up the villains. He defeats them.
Yeah.
And for a grander plot of some kind.
Yeah. I
but
like
But his motives are villainous.
This is like The Incredibles.
Yeah, a little bit. Yes, absolutely. That is a very good point. Yeah, very much like The Incredibles. He is like, what's the kid's name?
I know, I never remember.
Oh my god. Oh, it's Jason Lee.
Yeah.
It's Syndrome.
Syndrome.
It's a big S on his suit. Syndrome. And Mysterio, played by Jake Gyllenhaal. It's funny. The meta story is extra funny because it's Jake Gyllenhaal finally in a Spider-Man movie. Jake Gyllenhaal, young Jake Gyllenhaal.
We've all been waiting. What?
No, young Jake Gyllenhaal. Remember Donnie Darko?
Yeah, vaguely.
Breakout hit, Donnie Darko, cult favorite.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, Jake Gyllenhaal back then was this close, and if you're watching the video, very close, centimeters close, to replacing Tobey Maguire in Spider-Man 2 as Peter Parker.
There you go.
Because Tobey Maguire suffered an injury in filming Seabiscuit. Do you remember that? Tobey Maguire played the jockey, Seabiscuit after...
I don't remember it, but I'm not surprised that you do.
So he did Spider-Man 1, made $116 million mm-hmm. opening weekend, first movie to break $100 million, huge success. Then he did Seabiscuit, hurt himself, and Sony was willing to recast Spider-Man, and Jake Gyllenhaal had stepped up, and they were going to... if you didn't know, you probably wouldn't have cared. Right? It would have just been another young kid.
Yeah.
And I think Jake Gyllenhaal could have pulled it off. And then that's why there's the joke in Spider-Man 2, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 2, where Peter Parker jumps off the roof. He loses his powers slightly, his confidence. He falls down. He has that joke where he goes, my back, because it's calling to the meta-awareness that he injured his back and potentially could not have played that role again.
You appreciated that.
I totally appreciate it.
Spider-Man
that.
Only earned $114 million.
Oh, I was off by $2
opening
million.
Weekend.
Inflation.
So he finally gets his comeuppance. He's now in a Spider-Man
movie.
He's
in a Spider-Man movie. He's a villain. Presumably, my assumption is that he is a villain. It's interesting that it played for you, Jeremy, as him being a mysterious hero.
Everyone else who's not a comic book nerd, it played for them too. That's as you said, that's their game. That's what they're trying to
do. But now the MCU has now established that they can kind of flip-flop back and forth. They don't have, you know, with Loki and some of
these. Yeah, we just talked about that last week, right. Is that, you know, I think in general in pop culture, in Hollywood, if you live long enough as a villain, you end up being a hero. It's
sure.
a twist on The Dark Knight.
Sure.
Right? Because your enduring popularity, the people in their fantasy stories love heroes.
I mean,
anti-heroes at the very worse.
I was going to say, you say Dark Knight, though, but he was never a villain.
No, the line in The Dark Knight.
Oh, right, yes.
When Harvey Dent goes, yes. Like Caesar in Rome, you live long enough as a hero, you end up being the villain.
Got it.
Except in reality, it's the other way around for Hollywood. Now, the more interesting thing, worth speculating,
yep.
And I'll ask you this as a viewer going cold, when do you think this movie takes place?
That's the big question.
Right. So it's going to take place after Homecoming and before the last film.
Before Infinity War.
Yeah.
That's your assumption.
Yeah.
But then the question would be then, where is Tony Stark? Because Tony Stark kind of can fly around and is sort of supporting Spider-Man with tech and with, and you know, he's leaving his suit at home.
Well, Nick Fury brings him a new super suit.
So right, he has two new suits in this trailer. He has a new skinned version of his Homecoming suit, except this time it's black. It's the black Spider-Man suit.
Yeah.
And that's a callback to in the comics in the 90s, artists just decided it was boring to draw Spider-Man with red and blue.
Yeah.
And so they were a little more edgier and did red and black. And so this is a callback to that. I grew up with a red and black Spider-Man suit.
Do you remember the Spider-Man pinball machine that came out like 10 years ago? The limited edition was black.
Oh, it was red and black. There you go. So it's a canonical color scheme. And there's also apparently a new suit. You catch a glimpse of it, and it's more like a stealth, almost like a, not a bank robber, like a heist suit, maybe you could call it, right? He's almost wearing just like a ski mask with some actuated goggles.
He's got a wingsuit.
Well, that's a black suit.
Oh, it is?
But okay. There's like a quick shot of him that basically looks like...
Oh, right.
It's like a special ops type
that's
suit.
That's weird looking.
With like a harness and... And that, we're not sure where that comes from. But very good speculation because he doesn't have the Iron Spider suit that he got in Infinity War.
Right? He can't be in Infinity War, post-Infinity War.
Because he died in Infinity War.
Yeah.
Right?
Well,
is this just letting it be known that the things that what everyone expects is that the deaths in Infinity War aren't permanent and that Spider-Man comes back in some way?
This isn't going to be... When does this movie come out?
It comes out after Endgame.
Oh, that's weird. It can't. They wouldn't do that. I think so, it takes place before
Kevin
Infinity
Feige,
War.
Head of Marvel Studios, has said this takes place after Endgame.
No.
He actually
said
that?
Blowing my mind.
Oh.
He can't do that. That's a spoiler.
It could be a lie. It could be a lie. They have lied before.
About the title of the movie, Endgame.
They have. Yeah, exactly.
Well, or it could be... It could be half and half. Some could be before, some could be after. There's no reason that it all has to take place.
That's right. It could be
after.
95% of the movie is before and 5% is after, and it'll jump forward.
Absolutely.
You're absolutely right. Because the fan speculation, I think what Jeremy thinks, is that in Infinity War, you see him on a school bus.
Yeah.
It's during the school year. And so presumably that's maybe after he comes back from this summer vacation.
You're making connections.
Now, would that be less enticing for moviegoers to be like, watching after Endgame, watching a flashback to before the world-changing events that happened in Infinity War and Endgame? All the risks would be gone.
MCU has no problem playing with world-changing events and just kind of putting them on the sideline.
Yeah.
You know, all of the Marvel movies, everything has a earth-changing event.
If I were to have to put money on it, I would think this actually does mostly take place, if not entirely takes place, after Endgame. Because, and even from the trailer, there are glimpses of New York under reconstruction, buildings destroyed, presumably from Infinity War / Endgame.
Yeah.
You never had seen Sam Jackson, Nick Fury interact with Spider-Man before, and Nick Fury, even though he dusted as well.
He did dust.
You have Happy Hogan saying the line, "You're all alone." You have a check in the beginning of the film. The check that at that community center, wherever he is, that he celebrated with Aunt May and Happy Hogan.
Yeah.
That check is from the Stark Foundation, and it's signed by Pepper Potts. It's not signed by Tony Stark.
Oh, dude. Oh, my God.
We're going deep.
So there's a very possibility that, as people have speculated, Tony Stark maybe dies in Endgame. Robert Downey Jr.'s contract is up. And this is a post Iron Man world.
I'm a casual fan at best of these Marvel films, and I don't like this.
this troubles you?
Yeah, I don't like having this level of spoiler in my trailer for my Spider-Man movie about the upcoming, Endgame.
But unless you do a deep dive, it's not the spoiler that you're...
I mean, any
unless you have Norm explaining
he
it.
He did it. You're right. I shouldn't blame the trailer because I'm not
just
smart.
Blame Norm.
I'm not smart enough to decipher all this.
So the assumption for most people watching this is that it is a prequel.
Right.
Is what they're playing as.
Yeah.
And there is a shot of Peter Parker's passport as he needs to get his passport renewed or a new passport for traveling overseas. And that close-up shot, the year of his birth and the year that it currently is are CG'd out.
Oh, my gosh.
They blurred it?
It's not even blurred. It's not
it's
even
gone.
There. It's not even a legitimate passport.
Right.
Marvel has unofficially said in interviews that the years that the movie comes out is mm-hmm. roughly in line with the year that it currently is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in Infinity War, when they talk about, you know, having been at Civil War, you know, back in Germany, how long has it been run? It's been a rough couple of years. So it's been like, it's been the 2 years since Civil War and Infinity War, just like it has been
obviously
in our time.
Captain Marvel is an exception.
Yes, that's a period piece.
But they are also playing with time. Like they, again, in the trailer, they jump back and forth all over. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's... Yeah,
that's true.
The math never works, because you know what? They're just movies.
What?
They're just movies. When they filmed those movies back then, they were not taking into account. Probably the most egregious one is in, if you want to go real deep dive, is in Spider-Man Homecoming. Do you remember Spider-Man Homecoming? The villain is the Vulture, Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And in the very beginning of the film, it's a flashback to the Battle of New York.
Sure.
Right? And he's part of the construction company that's going to rebuild New York. He has the contract to, and they pull the contract away from him. And he's like, I got a family to feed. And he has a picture that his daughter drew. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it jumps and it says on screen, like 5 years later or something. And if you do the math, that's like a clue as to how, when Infinity War was, or I'm sorry, when Avengers 2012 was to when Spider-Man Homecoming was, or it's 10 years later or something. And the timing just doesn't work out.
Look, I'm just saying that the cliffhanger between Infinity War and Endgame is epic. This is the best cliffhanger I can remember since Empire Strikes Back. Easily.
Bold.
Like, bigger than Back to the Future, bigger than any other film I've seen. And so don't mess
bigger
with that.
Bigger than Back to the Future?
Yes.
Two?
So don't mess with that. Like, don't throw, like,
Back to the Future
spoilers
two
in
gives
trailers.
Me chills every time I think about Back, not Back to the Future 1.
Yeah.
Because 1, yeah, when it's your kids.
When he's standing on the road.
When he's standing on the road.
And he gets the telegram.
And he goes, I'm back from the future.
Yeah, it's great. It's great.
My mind explodes every time I think about that.
Right.
For Doc Brown's.
For me, not as big as Empire.
No. Empire, it's more peril, though.
You didn't see Empire in the theater.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying.
But Back to the Future, I felt uneasy.
Yeah, I'm with you.
It
wasn't that long of a wait between those films.
No, because they shot those
back-to-back.
They
shot back-to-back as well.
Yeah.
Although they re-edited the end of the first one to tag in the Doc Brown coming in and saying,
in the beginning of
we got to go back
with
to the future
with
your kids with
the
with
new
Mr.
Actress.
Fusion. Oh yes, with
the
oh
girlfriend from Karate Kid. Yeah,
Elizabeth Shue.
Yeah.
Wow, we are going deep today.
Adam on Still Untitled. I'd forgotten the name of Jake Johnson. I remembered it after recording the podcast as the voice actor for Into the Spider-Verse, but he said, am I losing my brain cells from fatherhood?
Just 10%.
Just 10%.
All right.
Yeah.
You've got some to spare.
All right. Let's continue with some pop culture news. I was tempted to put this as a top story this week because I squeed and exclaimed so loudly when I read this on Twitter. Missions accepted.
It's funny because speaking of Back to the Future, when I was reading this headline, I thought that that's where this was going because it's Christopher McQuarrie closes deal to direct Back to.
Oh, as you're reading it. Like the headline, as you're reading it, oh, that would have been a... That wasn't a big thing. You know, Robert Zemeckis has said, or Bob Gale has said, they would never
exactly
allow a Back to the Future remake. And in recent interviews, Robert Zemeckis, because he just released Welcome to Marwen, the Marwen Call adaptation, he everyone in interviews asked him, you know, because I think like some studio or some publication did a big poll, like what's the movie you want to see remade the most? And Back to the Future was way up there.
Sure.
And he says it's a product of its time.
Good for him. Don't touch it.
People think that because they remember it so fondly,
right?
But it wouldn't work in today.
Just to say, it holds up better than any.
It is one of my favorite films
I can remember from the 80s.
You know, for Adam, it's Raiders.
Yeah.
For me, it's Back to the Future.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
It is the perfect.
Our household
perfect
is a
film.
Big Back to the Future fans, across the board.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, going to Chris McCord. Not Back to the Future, but Back to Back. Lord of the Rings style. I guess Infinity War Endgame style. Filming two Mission Impossible movies. MI7, is that right? Yeah, MI7 mm-hmm. and MI8, which presumably will be the last ones with Tom Cruise.
So both of them have Tom Cruise. So will it be maybe a handoff? Maybe 8 will be a handoff.
Well, you know, 4 was supposed to be a handoff.
Yeah.
And Tom Cruise held on too dearly
to
the role. Tom Cruise will be 60 years old by the time this is all said and done.
Dude, he pulled it off
jumping
in 6.
Out of airplanes.
He was great in 6.
Yeah. Chris McQuarrie, now big collaborator with Tom Cruise. He's working on the Top Gun film right now with Tom Cruise, not directing it, but he also did Edge of Tomorrow. They've talked about Edge of Tomorrow. This, I guess the only downside to this news is it means that Edge of Tomorrow 2 will probably not happen.
At least not for the next 4 years.
Right, and at that point, Tom Cruise would be 60 plus, and I don't know how they could tell that story.
Honestly, we've talked before about this process of once they do a body scan.
Yeah, you could de-age.
They could de-age, or they turn another actor into Tom Cruise.
And they did that for Logan. If there's a lot of great behind-the-scenes footage in Logan where...
Samuel Jackson.
And Jackson, yes.
So as long as he can do the voice.
But Tom Cruise wants to do the stunts.
I know he does.
And at this point, people are going to watch these films to see the crazy things Tom Cruise will do.
I think if he can physically do it, he will continue.
Now, we talked about this. Do you think that's true? I don't think most people know that he's doing those stunts, or they just assume it's a special effect.
Oh, no. I think it's well known. And, you know, I think there's a lot of, extra media. You know, he did a thing on Jimmy Kimmel where he did skydiving. And,
it's part of the
marketing, persona.
The story.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Really?
Well, I mean, it started with, I think, I want to say MI4. Was when the first time because
when Dubai know, they're, when they're
Dubai
doing the,
exactly because yeah. There's that big photograph of him at the top of the tower, and that was like the first time a big real world stunt because you know MI2 had the rock climbing scene which he did mm-hmm. and that was it was cool but it wasn't as once in a lifetime crazy and he wasn't as old as well and Chris McQuarrie had resisted. He'd said publicly he was not going to direct the next one. And he said, good luck to the next one, the next writer-director. I think we all knew. In my heart of hearts, I knew he'd come back. He had created the character, Ilsa Faust, in MI5. He had developed the relationship in MI6. Fallout had been the most highest-grossing Mission Impossible film thus far. I think Tom Cruise's highest-grossing film ever. And Paramount, as we talked about last week, since they've shelved Star Trek, you know, Star Trek is kind of on hold. They haven't done well with Ninja Turtles as their franchise. Transformers hasn't made all the money it could have.
Bumblebee got good reviews, too.
Great, critically great. But they need those tentpoles, and now they have one for 2020 and 2021.
And they are not going to give it up. I think they're going to keep cranking them out if they can make money.
They got to end the story at MI8. I'd be happy for them to end the story.
Why? They don't end James Bond.
Well, they'll recap. And the Tom Cruise, the Ethan Hunt story at MI8. And at that point, you'll have a quadrilogy of Chris McQuarrie written, directed Mission Impossible films, just as many as there were before him with the four different directors, which we can all lament the idea, the concept of having a different tone, different style, different writer-director combo for the previous films was really interesting.
Yeah, for some.
You didn't, what?
No.
De Palma doing the first one? That is a De Palma film.
I liked the first one.
John Woo.
I didn't like that.
You don't have to like it, but you can identify like this.
Can appreciate
that it was such a different style.
I'm not paying $12 to appreciate it.
Mission Impossible 3 being J.J. Abrams' first film he directed.
I
still think that's my favorite one in terms of action.
Yeah.
And then Brad Bird doing live action for the first time.
Yeah.
Like these are proving grounds for some directors, and also it's a twist in genres for others.
I think if you find the right mix, you stick with it.
Okay. Very interesting. Well, how about the director-writer combo of Jason Reitman, Jason Reitman? Rebooting, maybe returning? Because this is probably the biggest news to happen. The break last night. Sony has been working on a secret Ghostbusters film.
I had to look this up. I was like, I know that last name.
Son of Ivan Reitman.
I did not know who Jason Reitman
director
was.
Director of Up in the Air.
Director of Ghostbusters.
Well, no, Ivan Reitman directed Ghostbusters, but yeah. Jason Reitman did Up in the Air, had already established himself.
I had no idea.
Young adult, Tully, Thank You for Smoking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a great director in his own right.
Okay.
But he apparently is taking the reins of the Ghostbusters franchise, and it will be a return to the first universe. Now,
the alternate.
Wait, I didn't see the new one. Is that a different universe?
And that, I think, was the problem for... I mean, I think it's a fine film. It's a hilarious film. I love the characterizations of... Like, Chris Hemsworth in the film is great. I think Melissa McCarthy is great in it. Kristen Wiig is hilarious. I think it's totally fine and good as a Ghostbusters film. But for people who believe in continuity or hold that very tightly... They established it as a standalone universe. Like, it was a world where Ghostbusters didn't exist.
Weird. Okay.
The problem that I had with it was, you know, there's such nostalgia. Like, that was my Raiders. That was one of my, you know, that was one of my early movie experiences was going to see Ghostbusters.
I was a Ghostbuster for Halloween.
Yeah. Like, that was a youthful, you know, experience.
Stranger Things.
Exactly. So, you know, to sort of see it be completely redone as opposed to sort of like, okay, yeah, that existed.
Yeah,
it felt wrong.
Got it.
Well, it's the difference between, I guess, what in Hollywood they call a hard reboot and a soft reboot.
Right.
Right. Soft reboot is new cast, but within the same continuity. Star Trek being famously the one that did that in a creative way with time travel. But with Ghostbusters, they had cameos from the original cast, but it was established as a whole separate universe, which means because for this one, this Jason Reitman film, which they're supposedly filming this summer to come out next year, it will be returned to the original heroes and maybe their legacy.
Obviously, you would have said already if there was any mention of any original cast members being involved.
No mention in the story that I read.
Okay.
Yeah. Presumably they will be involved in, you know, at least the surviving members, three ones.
We've lost Egon.
Yes. Yeah.
We can only hope to see more Bill Murray.
I would have loved to have seen a Harold Ramis directed.
Oh, dude, that would be Ghostbusters. He shows up from time to time in his Ghostbusters suit.
Yeah.
Like, I know of one time that he went up on stage just to surprise everybody wearing his suit. So he doesn't hate the series. Like, he's got love for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting. Other genre stuff. This week, we have Star Trek Discovery Season 2 kicking off. You guys excited? You guys going to watch? That's actually debuting. If you're listening to this on Thursday, it's tonight.
Tonight.
I'm going to watch it tonight.
I'm still bitter about this series not being as kid-friendly as Next Gen.
It's a dark series.
It's dark.
It's not that dark. It's not HBO.
No. It's not Game of Thrones. But it's definitely got much more like goriness, and it has language, and it's just not Next Gen. I mean, it's not Next Gen. In tone.
Did you start watching Orville?
No. But that would be...
That's the one that maybe you should watch with your family, because that one is very much...
Yeah, you said that.
Next Gen. Right.
I was going to say, the trailers for the shorts are really dark. I mean, those even go... I mean, just from like a visual, like almost a horror perspective.
You're talking about the short films, the short treks.
The short treks, yes.
Yeah, so between the two seasons of Star Trek Discovery, CBS Interactive, or CBS, what's the service called? I forget what it's called.
I don't know.
But
All Access.
All Access, that's right. CBS All Access released short films featuring Harvey Mudd, Rainn Wilson, and some of the characters you'd seen from the first season in these short Star Trek mini films, which they can go far out, darker, more funny, just off-kilter stories. This season has a new showrunner, so it's Alex Kurtzman, who was slated to direct a Star Trek film before Justin Lin came in, and so he sets out a little bit of a new vision.
Okay.
Of course, it's gonna, you know, if you watched last season, the Enterprise is there, they're not dancing around it anymore. This will they have
Spock.
A new Spock is there
with facial hair.
Very excitedly, there's also Captain Pike, Christopher Pike.
You know, I'll jump in. I'm going to need one of those. If you missed last season,
right.
Here's the recap.
Right.
20 minutes later, I can start watching the new season.
Right. Because the last season, I felt ended. There were twists and turns and a big revelation, but I think it left, it kind of petered off a little bit.
Did you watch it?
It didn't stick the landing.
Exactly I watched the first couple episodes, and then I lost interest.
That's what I did.
Well, one of the favorite characters in the first season died in like the second episode,
right.
And that's Michelle right. Yeoh's Captain.
She was the
Philippa
captain.
Georgia.
Yeah, yeah,
right. And I'm going to spoil it for you guys.
Do it
because
she didn't die.
Well, she did die.
Oh, okay.
She appears. The character appears. The actor Michelle Yeoh comes back in the Mirror Universe form
as the same character.
Well, in the Mirror Universe.
What does that mean?
Don't you know about the Star Trek Mirror Universe,
dude? I'm going to just resign from this podcast.
Are you kidding me? Mirror, mirror? You know, the whole point of Spock with beard,
yeah.
with goatee in the yeah. original series?
It's like Bizarro Spock?
Yes.
It's
classic. One of the most iconic episodes of Star Trek.
Of TOS.
Of TOS is called Mirror, mirror.
I need to go back and watch TOS.
And this was a trope of the 80s.
Yes. Transporter accident switches.
Transporter accident. Really?
Okay. Bridge crew.
Yeah.
Kirk and Spock get teleported to a mirror universe where the Federation is evil.
It's bizarre.
Evil. Spock, or it's actually, I believe it's just Kirk, not Spock.
Yeah.
Spock is has the goatee.
Okay.
And goatee means evil.
But
and they and the Federation in
what? How do you have an evil, evil Spock? I mean, he's not even. Is it?
Well, he's still logical.
Like a Romulan.
But the mission of the Federation is that you know they conquer worlds.
Oh my gosh.
They want to. They are not peacekeepers. They want to expand. They are tyrants. They're colonialists. They just want to build the empire.
This sounds great.
And the Mirror Universe was picked up again in DS9. Big part of DS9.
Yeah, that's
didn't go there.
Where you had flip sides. It's a fan favorite for better or worse. There are some like weird. I think in the non-canonically because it's in the books. It was established by William Shatner or his ghostwriter. In the William Shatner Star Trek books, he wrote a whole series where Captain Kirk was survived generations. yeah, exactly, right?
Okay.
Like, and it was established in First Contact. Remember First Contact, time travel? They went back and
yeah,
fought the Borg?
Yeah,
right.
That's when they met the Vulcans.
Yes. In what the theory is in the books is that when they went back in First Contact and saved Earth from the Borg,
yep.
that created them, that splintered off the Mirror Universe. And that's why the Earth folk was more cognizant and aware
mm-hmm.
of
the Earth folk
of extraterrestrial threats and became more militarized and
okay,
but anyway, that's
so
not canon.
So now it's back with this new season.
Well, in the season one,
just the facial hair.
Well, in season one of Star Trek Discovery, there is a whole subplot of the Mirror Universe.
Oh my gosh!
And they do go to the Mirror Universe.
They go there.
They go there.
How do you go there? You have to force your transporters to malfunction.
Well, in Discovery, Wormhole. they have the fancy teleporting ship. Right, the Discovery has that.
That's right.
I don't know what the drive forgot that they go to code black, and then you know the ship kind of spins and it can teleport to any place in the known galaxy or universe,
mm-hmm.
and including jumping across dimensions to the Mirror Universe. And in that Mirror Universe, Michelle Yeoh is still alive, and she's the Emperor of the Federation.
Oh my
gosh. She's pure evil. And the whole bunch of stuff happens. She gets brought back to
the
canon
bad.
Universe. And so the relationship that Michael Burnham,
this
lead character,
this is why I left.
Has,
I think this actually sums it up pretty well.
has with her captain. It's now a different captain.
Okay.
It looks like her mentor.
Do they kill
but
her?
It's not
again.
They don't. And the news is that it's such a good character
yeah.
that she's going to get her own spinoff series.
Oh, really? As the evil emperor?
As the evil emperor in the prime universe running Section 31.
This is way too complicated. Like, if you have to explain that much about why the show...
Have you seen Star Trek? There's Memory Alpha, Jeremy.
Memory Alpha? What are you saying? Memory Alpha?
Oh, my God.
Is that a thing?
Yes.
I think there's different ways of watching Star Trek.
One step back. In the Star Trek universe, Memory Alpha is the big, great big database. Is like the supercomputer. And if you go to Memory Alpha, is I believe the...
This is Gene Roddenberry's wife.
Memory Alpha is on the internet?
It's the Star Trek Wiki.
Oh, I love it.
Memory Alpha is the name for the Star Trek Wiki.
Oh, that, see, now that's somebody who knew what they were doing.
And if you want to know all things about Star Trek, you go to Memory Alpha.
Okay.
And you go deep dive. They have a,
or ask Norm.
And they have deep links into everything.
Norm's downloaded it.
Sorry, Memory Alpha is the planet that was the Federation Central Library. The Federation Central Library was Memory Alpha. In the Star
Trek.
So
why are you bringing this up?
I'm saying...
Just to make me feel bad?
No, I'm saying that if you are confused about anything...
Oh, I can just go there.
Go to Memory Alpha.
I'm just going to
ask
you.
And just start reading.
And just start reading. You can spend hours.
Not going to do that.
Hours.
I'm going to ask you, and then I'm going to say that's enough. We'll continue this some other time.
Okay. That is enough. One last bit of pop culture news. We love shitting on the Fyre Festival. We had a good laugh last year talking about how what a disaster that was. And Netflix...
It's going to capitalize on that.
Yes, and produce a documentary about the Fyre Festival called Fyre, which I think is dropping this week. Now, I haven't seen it yet, but the big twist, the meta twist, is unbeknownst maybe to Netflix or unbeknownst at least to the public, Hulu was working on a same documentary about the Fyre Festival and dropped theirs ahead of Netflix.
How far ahead? Just days.
Days ahead.
Is this Much Ado About Nothing? I mean, is this like... It happens, or do you think this was intentional?
The streaming wars have.
Do you think it's intentional? Because this reminds me of A Bug's Life. If you remember, DreamWorks produced Ants. They heard that Pixar was making A Bug's Life, and then DreamWorks produced Ants.
Intentionally.
After they started it, after they heard about Pixar's project, and they released it intentionally beforehand in order to sabotage Pixar. And of course,
sabotage by what? Getting people not keen on ant movies?
Yes, basically.
I guess CG movies.
Well, I think that they probably just tried to steal the thunder. Like, who wants to see a second ants film?
Well, I don't know that it has to be negative. It could just be I'm going to build on the buzz.
Right.
You know, when you go to
the
movie
buzz.
Theater,
nice.
The bugs. Yeah. When you go to the movie theater, it's like, I want to see the bug movie.
Confused.
Which one do you do?
Unfortunately, it set them up to be compared, and compared they were. And Pixar came out ahead.
Unfortunately, no one remembers either of them, really.
A Bug's Life. Hey, people love A Bug's Life.
Right? Yeah. It's good. Yep. Same thing with Shark's Tale, Finding Nemo. Oh, that underwater movie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it was a bigger problem back with Blockbuster days when you'd go to the...
when there was only three movies to choose from.
Well, or when people didn't have the internet and you would go to the Blockbuster and you'd be renting a movie and tell the family... Pick up that animated film with the bugs, and then the mom or the dad wouldn't know what the kid was talking about, and you'd set them up for disappointment. I mean, that's how these trauma films get, right? They confuse people.
So now it's mom, I want to see a doc on
the Fyre Festival. About that. Well, thank goodness I have Hulu, because we have Hulu family, because we can watch it, but I want the Netflix one. I mean, you have these things like Armageddon and Deep Impact that came out on the same time. A Volcano, Dante's Peak came out at the same time. I don't think people get confused, but it is funny. It feels more like that two production companies, two documentarians wanted to make this. One was able to sell to Netflix, and one didn't sell to Netflix because Netflix had bought a Fyre Festival documentary. And then subsequently was able to sell their documentary to Hulu.
Sure.
And then Hulu saw that as an opportunity to snipe Netflix and get theirs released out. And I think it sucks for documentarians to be compared, I guess, right? Because like a documentary, you're telling one perspective of a story. There's only so many facts out there. You only have so many access. And when people want to see the definitive documentary.
Yeah.
And then if there's a lot of overlapping material, everything gets muddled.
We'll find out.
I guess we will. So many streaming services. Everyone wants to launch their own streaming service. And that takes us to our next segment, which is...
This coffee is amazing.
Is it?
It's gone now.
Is it though?
Oh, I really enjoyed it.
Mm. It smelled good.
I'm sad it's gone.
What was the strongest flavor?
Cinnamon.
So
yeah, so you nailed
theoretically,
it.
Theoretically, cinnamon is the thing that you don't necessarily need the orange. I think orange peel is a little weird for me in coffee. Yeah. I don't need that flavor.
Don't judge
coffee. Is it? It's cold brew.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting.
Which Zach will tell you, he doesn't need ice in his cold brew. Right?
No, yeah. I just like medium brew.
Ooh, lukewarm brew.
Lukewarm brew. I know, I'm weird.
There's got to be a better name for that. I'll think on it. I'll use that 10%. Do you remember back in the good old days when you could just turn on the TV and get NBC for free?
Yeah.
Over the air?
I do that now.
You can kind of do that now.
I haven't had cable in 11 years, so I just do bunny ears. We get it.
You do the bunny ears.
That's how we watch the Olympics.
Wait, do you have a VHF knob on the top of your TV that you go clunk, clunk, clunk?
When I want to watch Xbox, I have a Switch box. I have to go.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, it used to be when the first transition to HDTVs came out, there was a difference between buying TVs that had the receiver
built in, or didn't.
And you had to get a separate digital receiver box to get the bunny ears digital signal.
Right.
And specifically with NBC, I believe it was in the Winter Olympics of 2000. Winter Olympics was the first one that the Bay Area, we didn't get NBC because they moved the affiliate to San Jose. And so you couldn't even get over bunny ears.
Oh my gosh. Really?
Yeah.
Yikes.
The signal wasn't strong enough. So, funny thing with the government shutdown. Did you see the thing online? Tangent, random tangent with no FCC governance right now.
Uh-huh.
People can just broadcast
whatever they want.
Whatever they want.
Pirate radio.
Of a signal that they can just...
I saw a story on some major website saying, now's a good time to change your Wi-Fi channels beyond 11.
Yeah.
Right?
Take advantage.
Yeah.
Zero governance.
Oh, it's a disaster.
Anarchy. All right.
End tangent. Going back. Well, NBC, take it for granted. They also want to start their own subscription service.
Which, what do you guys think? Because do you think this was good for CBS? Do you think they look at this as I know it's a revenue stream, but it seems like the energy behind it is just really fizzled. So it's weird to hear another major network kind of go after this.
I thought Hulu was NBC.
And that's the thing. ABC and NBC have stakes in Hulu. And Hulu runs, but still has, it's like one hand paying the other because they also pay for licensing while being, partly owned by competing companies.
Now, is it going to be like Disney pulling all of their stuff off of
Hulu?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. So, everyone wants that $12 a month. This will be in the $12 plus a month, which is kind of crazy because wasn't the promise of a la carte subscription services that you don't have to pay for everything?
We're getting back up to that $50 to $100
cable.
It's to get everything that we need.
Well, this is price elasticity of demand because it turns out people are willing to pay. And we'll talk about whether NBC, we'll speculate whether NBC. They're one library of content, because remember we talked about Friends. NBC is Friends, and Friends makes in syndication $1 billion a year. It's crazy. Backlog of Friends. Netflix paid the tax to NBC for Friends, or is it Paramount? Whoever owns the rights. I mean, they have rights to shows that people, for better or worse, old shows that people want to watch in syndication. And if they can invest in franchises and original shows that people will want to pay to see, maybe they'll find a subset of the audience that will want to do it.
But is there enough content there? Just NBC shows?
Just the backlog?
Yeah.
Yeah, you have Thursday Night Comedy.
That's huge.
You have 30 Rock.
Decades.
Thursday. They owned Thursday Night for so long.
Yeah.
I guess I just don't. All of SNL?
Oh, well, yeah. If they have the whole SNL, that's pretty compelling.
Right?
And
this is NBC Universal is a Comcast company. And so this is just another Comcast move to get your money because people are not subscribing to Comcast proper anymore.
Wait, I'm confused now. I didn't know about this until now. And I'm reading the article and it says that I can subscribe to it for free and it'll be ad supported, right? But then it says I can pay $12 a month. That gets rid of the ads? Is that the idea?
That gets rid of the ads.
Well, that's how Hulu originally started.
It's the same content?
Same content.
Okay.
Yeah. And that is exactly how Hulu started. Hulu was free to watch with ads on your desktop. And then you had paid a small fee just to watch the exact same service on mobile devices with ads. And now you can pay a full no ad. More private.
And you only can subscribe to the ad-free service if you subscribe to cable.
Which is a Comcast thing.
You can subscribe to any paid service, but from Charter, AT&T, Cox, Dish.
We're really stretching. We talked about this before. What are the services? If it came down to it, what would you cut first? Right. What would you cut first, and what would you keep, and how much would you...
I think it depends on, as we get more of these, is the content going to disappear from the other services? You know, the fact that we can go onto Netflix and still see NBC content, if that all goes away and then all of the Marvel and Disney content goes away and all of the, you know, it's like all of a sudden now it's, you know, really, really a la carte where you have to make a decision. It's much more difficult.
And for Netflix, who have invested billions every year, billions in content, in original programming,
yeah,
they are funding that through price increases.
Right.
And so they just announced this week and their stock shares shot up because this is a huge moneymaker. For the U.S., basically mm-hmm. anyone who subscribes to the HD or better versions mm-hmm. of their service will have a price increase of, what?
$2?
$2 from, if you have the UHD, if you have 4K, it's $14 to $16. And if you have the normal HD one is, what is it, to $12?
A month.
And if you have non-HD, it's $8 to $9.
Does this even... I mean, I don't even blink at this. Like, this to me is creepage. Like, it doesn't... I don't go,
That's smart.
Oh, absolutely.
They can
That's the price elasticity of demand, right? Like but at what point will you say... Will your brain go, no.
Right.
As long as the increase is, you know, under 20%, maybe even 30%.
It's not an absolute value.
But
yeah.
It's not like
the price increase. Wow.
It's not like the quality of Netflix has been static. It has been going up and up and up. And so I'm fine with an increase because I'm getting a better product. No?
I think there's more stuff. So let's say Netflix makes 10 shows, right? If this price increase gets you would you rather have 5 new shows or would you have increased quality of, you know?
But you're not buying the shows. You're amortizing the cost over a period of time. You just realize that they're going to be able to produce more good shows.
But
in the future.
That's the thing. I don't want more.
You want
more. I want fewer and better.
Are you sure you don't want more? You want like more shows that you're interested in. And their strategy seems to be going, you know, deep and narrow. So that they're like looking
They're not deep, they're broad.
No,
there's
no.
a ton of stuff. But most of which I never watch.
Well, what I mean by that is that their audiences, like they're looking for segments. They're looking for specific demographics that are deep and narrow. And so like they go for the toys that made us and it's for us.
Right.
And it's like really for us. But we wouldn't get that with a broad spectrum that you get on
so if this price increase allows for every category to go deeper, for people who just watch the cooking shows to get better cooking shows, for people who want their HGTV home decorating shows to get better.
But I think it's more. I don't know that it is better.
And I don't want more. I only want better. Because there's too much. There's too much.
I think they've got I think they have a good metric for
like
quality.
HBO, which charges admittedly a lot, $15 a month, they don't go for more. Mm-hmm. They just go for better.
But I feel like, so the way I use HBO is I subscribe for 6 months at a time and then I shut it down because I wait for the content to build back up because I sort of go through their catalog and I don't need to go back and watch Game of Thrones episode 2. I want the latest ones. So the fact that when I pull up Netflix, there's always something new that I haven't seen.
The thing with HBO is that they're still basing the number of hours they produce on the amount of time in a day because they still have their broadcast that is their core business.
And half of their core business or a significant portion is licensing movies. Is people go to HBO, home box office, to watch movies that before they hit basic cable.
Which used to be Netflix's only business.
Yeah. Yeah, when they had the Starz deal.
Right. Well, no, I mean even like just getting other films from networks. I mean, it wasn't just Starz that they were using, was it?
It was primarily their deal was through Starz. Like they got the Starz was their back channel.
Like when they get Inception, they're
is directly through the studio.
Okay,
but previously when Netflix first did streaming, when they transitioned from DVDs to on demand,
gotcha.
They backended through the Starz deal, and then Starz of course split off. Netflix has finally had some success with films, Bird Box. I would even go as far to say things like Bandersnatch, Count, the Coen Brothers film.
Did you watch that?
Bandersnatch?
Yeah.
Oh, I loved it.
You made it through it? Did you like go back and choose your own adventures?
I went through 1.5 times.
Yeah, that's
so,
good. Yeah.
That's all right.
That's about through it.
Yeah. If this means they'll do better, they have more ammunition, more budget to actually pick up films that I would have paid $20 to see in theaters, than M4.
Well, they bought the whole token. You know,
that was Amazon.
Oh, that was Amazon. Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
Oh, which I haven't heard anything about. So, yeah. Okay, well, yeah. There's potential there. And again, it's not like I don't think they're lacking money. They seem to be throwing.
No, they are working.
I don't think that's the limit.
They're profitable. They make hundreds of millions of dollars.
I don't think they are. I think they are still working. Like
they claim a profit.
Well, I think they probably spend more money than they eventually will spend on content. I think they're still throwing a lot at the wall right now.
Yeah,
they will get focused.
They've got 58 million subscribers.
No, I think they have 79.
Oh,
and this is the 58 that will
that
cost.
Will be affected.
Yes.
Oh wow.
Yes.
So I mean, this is going to be a difference of $100+ million a month.
And there goes their stock price. Yeah. That's why it went up. $16 for UHD. I really hope they don't split that off with HDR. I think for most people. In my position, $20 is too much a month for Netflix.
That's your hard limit.
Yeah, 18 is where I would start feeling uncomfortable.
Don't cross it, Netflix. Normal unsubscribe.
No,
he
won't.
$20 a month.
No, he won't.
That's Amazon Prime. I'm not getting free 2-day shipping from Netflix.
No.
Yeah, but compared to the Amazon library, Netflix just is immense.
You don't have a kid watching TV yet.
That's true.
Just wait, because that is the...
Yeah.
That's where they get you. The Netflix Kids mode?
You know, also, at some point, because there is so much content on each of these platforms, the user experience matters a lot.
Oh, yeah. Just the interface.
The app interface. And I mean, that's why Netflix had the bounty for the recommendation algorithm. But right now, it sucks. There's some people I know didn't know that Infinity War was on Netflix because it didn't surface for them.
That's weird. Well, maybe that might be on purpose because like they're losing the Marvel stuff. Maybe
yeah, people who have watched the Marvel stuff. Oh no! They're gonna flaunt it if they have the rights. They're gonna flaunt it.
I just wish they'd turn off the Force Play trailers.
Yes.
Oh, I hate that
because you have to move quickly through them. Otherwise, you start hearing whatever it is that you're watching.
And sometimes it's temp music, and it's the same temp music because they don't have the rights to play it in the menu.
Turn it off.
It's just like exciting action movie music or romantic comedy music. Oh, anyway. All right, moving on. Let's skip ahead to some shoes.
Speaking of Back to the Future, you can now... Nike is really going all in on self-lacing shoes.
This is a problem that needed to be solved.
They had a prototype earlier, like a couple years ago, and the same kind of thing. They were $700. These, what are they calling them? The Nike Adapt BB. And they have a motor in the base of them, and they're not laces, so to speak. Like, you don't see actual laces on top. You can't replace the laces.
Right.
But whatever this motor is, it can grip down this mesh.
It tightens it.
And tightens your shoe, essentially, using these two buttons on the bottom of the shoe or your app. And the shoes, what are they going to cost? Like a couple, $200 or $300.
So this was Profiler featured in the Netflix documentary Abstract, Art of Design. Tinker Hatfield, who is the design lead over at Nike, he's the one who created the Air Jordans.
Really?
Huge, legendary figure in shoe design. He runs their innovation factory.
$350, I'm sorry.
And they talked about how they had the Air Mags, remember for the anniversary, the limited edition Air Mags that they made for charity, for Michael J. Fox's charity,
right,
to auction off for the anniversary. And then, because they had the aesthetic, then they also then prototype self-lacing shoes. And in the documentary, you can kind of tell, like, they thought they would have, like, an actual purpose. Like, they felt like this would actually be useful for athletes, you know, a perfectly fitting shoe for athletes.
Yeah.
But, you know, the motors or the servos are real big, and they would, like...
It comes at a cost.
It comes at a cost, totally. Where do you put the battery? It sounds like they figured it out, or at least to a point where they're happy with it. I'm unconvinced.
You're skeptical? Are you skeptical of the efficacy of them? Like, are they actually going to be helpful to basketball players to have a different strength in their tightening for when they're on the bench and when they're on the court kind of thing?
Yeah. So is that the idea? Like, you, when you're not in, when you're not exerting yourself,
yeah,
it knows, or you tap a button or something and it loosens up.
They said they hope to release a firmware update that allows a special training, like warm up mode, you know, so and then it transitions
adjust.
Back.
What can it adjust mid play?
Yeah, I mean that's the idea. Of course,
why would you want it?
You
got to
take your
tight.
Phone out and make the adjustment.
Someone from the sideline, someone from the bench is calibrating your shoe as you're running down up and down the court.
I want to put Zach on the sideline with a hacking terminal.
Oh, absolutely!
And undo everybody's shoes,
tie them together remotely.
Yeah.
So self-lacing shoes. How do they work? It's not magnets.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I guess the question is, you know, this harkens back to like the Reebok pump, you know, of the
right.
Yeah,
but those actually worked. It turned out air was a good thing to put in shoes.
That wasn't the that wasn't the sole of the shoe. That was actually the tightening mechanism. You actually could. It went around your ankle.
Oh,
and
sorry. I'm conflating.
Nike Air.
Yeah, I'm conflating the air bubble underneath, which was exposed versus the pumping.
Yeah. So again, a mechanism to. Customize the tightening of your shoe.
And that was on the tongue.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
the
tongue. Yeah.
I had those. I had the, you think, a basketball, like a ball on the top, at the top of the tongue, press it, and you could kind of feel it. It's like when you're in a car and you always want to adjust
the lumbar.
Yep. Exactly. The
same,
lumbar.
Same exact.
It's the same feeling. Like, oh, this is now it feels
different.
Firmer. Different. I guess this is better for me. Why wasn't it like this at the start?
Yeah. And I think that's part of, I mean, I don't know. How often do you tighten your shoes or loosen them during the day?
I don't. In fact, I leave them tied until they become untied.
Upon closer inspection.
I don't even untie them.
These
take my
were
shoes
loafers.
Off.
that's what these look like. I mean, these are, they are slip-on shoes.
Obviously, this is not a bad thing. If we all could have self-lacing shoes and self-zipping, you know, jeans, that would be wonderful, right?
Self-zipping jeans.
Right?
But I don't think that's what
adjustable.
Upon closer inspection, these are sweatpants.
But... what are the trade-offs? Like, I'm not sure that...
Charging.
Exactly.
Inductive charging underneath the hardwood.
It's not the process of having the charge that's the real problem. It's the extra weight. And if I'm playing basketball or if there's any kind of clunkiness or unbalance, that's going to be a factor.
So, I mean, the nice thing is it doesn't take a lot of energy to you know... tighten and loosen just, you know, periodically. Like, it's not like it's your cell phone that's constantly transmitting. It's just like on off. So I would guess the battery's pretty lightweight.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the real question is there real utility in it?
I mean, there's also tracking, right? They're in addition to the self-lacing and tightening aspects, you know, just like your tracking.
But what is it, I was going to say, what is it going to track that your Fitbit doesn't already
exactly.
track?
Exactly. Is it going to be more accurate because it's on your shoe?
Yeah, we get actual steps.
Like, and you also maybe have an impact force, right? Because impact for training, impact and where are your foot's impacting.
I think for a certain few, absolutely. But I think for the general public, it's going to be a gimmick. But not that's a bad thing.
The metrics is where my mind went. Like, I could see for training purposes, if you really could maybe mesh together optical tracking of the ball and the players along with the sensors in the shoes to get like the most accurate recreation of the physics of your play possible, that would be useful to coaches.
But there are already technologies that are outside of the shoe that do that for tracking and coaching purposes.
Here's an interesting thing, the way the motor works. There's a picture of the motor, the Verge of the Story, and it's almost like a small little cassette box.
Right in the bottom, next to the buttons.
And it has about 10 to 14 days of charge. Now, when it's tightened, it doesn't need to use power.
That's
when
what
it's
Zach
tight.
Was suggesting, yeah.
But it also needs to leave power, enough power to loosen. So if you wear them and it runs out of power, juice, you can't loosen.
You
so they say that
the
firmware will always conserve a little bit of power to loosen the laces.
Meaning at the last moment, it will unlace.
If you run out of power. It's the segue problem over again. It's George was falling over a segue, right? Because it ran out of power.
What happens to a Tesla if it's on autopilot and it runs out of juice?
When it gets close out of juice, it goes into limp mode.
Yeah.
But will it pull you over to the side?
I bet it would.
As if you haven't touched the wheel? Like if you refuse.
That's a very small scenario because it wants you to be holding the wheel the whole time anyway with autopilot. So in that, like, if it assumes that you've seen that you're down like 1% power and then you have bigger problems than autopilot being on.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
It does do wireless charging, these shoes. So there's it looks like a scale, like a weight scale.
With shoes, there's no excuse not to do wireless charging.
And so there is a coil underneath, and it's not a, I think it's a proprietary standard. It's not Qi charging. And then that mat will ship with the shoes. And so the pair of shoes comes with, you know, the mat and the shoes. $350, available for pre-sale, shipping in February. I'm tempted, guys. I'm tempted because this could live alongside.
I took a turn.
I'm tempted for the artifact for what this represents. Because this could live alongside the Jibo, you know, in the Hall of Fail Technologies 10 years from now.
So you're just predicting a failure, which is why it's
I like the artifact of what this can be. The you know, the big budget attempt.
I mean, I think there is...
If you and Kate and Bill got together and turned them into the Back to the Future shoes, that would be great. Like, you just convert them.
I mean, the form factor doesn't work.
These aren't high tops.
Figure it out.
And the way, if the cutaways, the way the lacing works, they're very thin strands.
I mean, we could make it work, but I think they also made, there's lots of people that have recreated the original Back to the Future high tops. So.
Yes, exactly. You can buy bootleg ones from China
that
really
work
cheaply. No, that don't work. They light up though.
Yeah. I wore those for Halloween.
They're also not that great looking. I mean, like, that's personal preference.
It's not that great looking.
But I kind of want to buy them.
Okay.
$350.
That's great.
Sorry. I mean, I could give me an investment for the baby. We could take it apart.
How is it an investment for the baby?
Because I think they'll only go up in value.
Oh, there's a collector's item.
I mean, shoes are big collector's items these days.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. You put them in some shrink wrap and you put them on a wall in New York and in some hole in the wall store. Yep. Some for thousands of dollars.
I think they will look good on this shelf.
You're right. $350. Let us know if you'd like us to buy a pair of the Nike Adapt BBs. Even for the purpose of taking them apart.
Maybe haptic feedback with your Oculus. You could somehow grab your feet.
Ooh.
Maybe. Like you're walking through mud. You can have
a little bit of tapping.
Yeah.
Vibration. That's motor.
Yeah.
I'd be more interested in that. No. I don't know.
Yeah. I do.
You say no. You think, Jeremy's thinking no. Jeremy's thinking no. Okay. Moving on. We have a ruling in the courts.
Oh, my gosh.
For... iPhones with Face ID or Touch ID, law enforcement are not allowed legally to force suspects to unlock your phones.
In California. So a California judge has ruled that even with a warrant, the government can't force people to unlock their devices with biometric features.
Wow. Yeah. So it's not because it's property. Like if they have a warrant to inspect your house, it's the same kind of warrant, but it's because of the biometric aspect.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird line to draw.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's different than...
So they could force a suspect with a warrant to enter the code. Is that what you're saying?
I believe so.
But just not to look at the phone or use a Touch ID.
Right.
You impede that aspect. They can confiscate your phone. You know,
and hack it themselves.
Right.
Yeah. This is a report by 9to5 Mac. So yeah, I mean, that's interesting. I was wondering how that would go. And I mean, this is one ruling. We'll see where it goes.
Twitter, which we olds use as our social media or our social network of choice, is launching a beta program.
Well, thankfully, it's not going to be a drastic change, though. So they've come up with a new way of showing conversations, and it's supposed to be a little more, user friendly. You'll be able to grok, like, what's the reply to what tweet and that kind of thing.
But it's weird that they're sort of, again, segregating that this is a beta program. Don't they always test out new things in the timeline? Like, they're just always making little tweaks without pushing it.
I think these visual changes are more dramatic. Thankfully, like, it's completely, like, compatible. It's not like a different Twitter. It just looks different. So it's a different way of presenting the information. So you'll be able to, it's almost like just a skin that you can turn on and turn off.
I bet it'll be met with resistance.
I don't think so, because I don't think it's like as big as changing the order of timeline or the number of characters.
Those are the two big changes. And the order of timeline is actually a feature you can turn off now.
Right.
So you can get back to the linear timeline, although they will occasionally recommend that you try their smart timeline, you know, every 30 days or so. Yeah. So you want to try this? You want to try? No, I kind of like just seeing
I think people
things.
Are really programmed with their thumbs. You know, I want to know where the button is, like, without even thinking about it, and any change feels weird, even if it's better.
Well, remember, Twitter all the extra use of Twitter, were tweet storms or conversations and threads, yeah. all of that was born out of creative uses of a limited platform.
Right.
Right. So Twitter being, and people finding ways to make more out of the idea of just posting.
Getting creative.
Getting creative. And once you start facilitating that and kind of building in these features, then I think you lose a little bit of that charm.
Look, this is, but this one is just visual. Like, this is another story from 9to5 Mac, and they say, at first, the beta program will include features like speech bubbles, indented replies, and different colors determined by whether you follow or are replying. I think this is useful. I mean, because I was kind of late to Twitter. I had no idea how to use the thing. They're going to have to make these kind of visual adjustments to get new people to use it.
As long as it doesn't take more screen real estate for the same data.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's the magic.
That's true. Yeah.
Now,
that's true.
Oddly, they also want to introduce a feature called icebreaker tweets, which it's they call that, it says here, Twitter's goal is for users to post their own icebreakers to create conversations between followers. I thought that's interesting because I think of Twitter as a relationship between the person and the followers, but it's that Twitter wants to encourage a relationship between the followers.
The feedback.
I think they totally understand that when tweets go viral and it's not, you know, it happens on such a regular basis that someone's posted something in you know thousands of times per day, even more, that you get like 1,000 retweets, and then within their network it reaches a tipping point where that tweet is shared, the larger bubble happens, and then conversations do happen in.
Between people who reply. Yeah.
Right. And they want to encourage that. That's exactly. where the real networking happens.
Because they realize that they have something in common.
Yeah. Or maybe not in common, but they really want to engage.
Well, given that they're both following the same person.
Yes. Yeah. Or happened upon this one viral tweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very interesting. All right. Google, stealth announcement, CES, cancellation. They are no longer making Chromecast audio, discontinuing it. This was the device that let you plug into your speaker and just beam audio over to your speaker system.
Okay.
But more and more speaker systems have Chromecast built in. And so this device, which it went really cheap. It's sold out now. It's redundant, but there are some audiophiles who just love it because they're on Android and they have a lot of old speakers that they love that they want to be able to send music to.
Get them while you can.
Yep. In the video game world, a couple bits of news. A report from Kotaku that EA had canceled a big open world Star Wars game that EA, their Vancouver offices, were working on, codenamed Orca, that this was planned for release in about 2 years or so.
Battlefront?
Not Battlefront. EA has, I think, because they have the overall Star Wars license to make video games, they have like Respawn Entertainment working on the Titanfall developers working on a Star Wars game. Of course, they had their Battlefront series. And so, you know, it's not surprising that they have Star Wars. They wanted to make Star Wars games in different genres. And it would have been cool to see an open world Star Wars game. It's not to say that they won't make one in the future, but it turns out that they wanted to make another game sooner. And so they scrapped this so that they could less ambitious game.
Anything related to Disney kind of pulling back on sort of the aggressiveness of Star Wars and just kind of how quickly these things are, released. Seems like there's just sort of been a little bit of a really fast expansion and then a pullback to be like, oh, okay, let's not.
I think, well, Disney is probably bracing itself for what Star Wars means post episode 9.
Right.
Because that's like the big.
We're going to get rid of all the original cast. There's not going to be anybody hanging on. At that point.
And the universe will have to endure in some way. It will, of course. But
a younger cast.
Star Wars will mean something different.
Yeah.
Right. And so much of the resurgence of Star Wars recently in the past 4 or 5 years was because of 7, 8, and 9.
Right.
So, the TV show will be a big thing. What The Mandalorian means. It's Star Wars.
It could be a big thing.
Could be. Yeah. I mean, live action, it's so funny. Like, The Mandalorian is no less as canonical as animated Star Wars show, Star Wars Resistance. And yet
it feels so much more official.
Once you move into the live action territory, that people, a switch flips and people are like, this is real. This is the thing I'm going to tie myself to. Same with Spider-Man.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Animation gets a bad rap. Red Dead Redemption, Red Dead Online. Rockstar announced that they will be launching a battle royale mode.
Mm-hmm.
I think who was it online that made a joke? It should have been called Cattle Royale.
That's good.
Yeah. 32 players.
Unless you can play as a cow, I don't want to begin.
Yeah. 32-player Battle Royale mode. Yep. I think Red Dead Online's struggling a little bit. Of course, they had the problems with their economy, with griefing early on, despite how popular the single-player game is. I think that they're kind of resetting expectations.
Single-player game, the game sold like almost $1 billion in its first 3 days.
Yes.
That's insane.
But most of the money for GTA 5 has come after the fact.
Yeah.
And to become the most successful entertainment property ever, financially. And Red Dead, unfortunately, does not look like it's going to follow that trend.
Well, it's the same. It's the MMO, Warcraft, all of the, you know, long-term, there's no legs on, you know, a single-player game. That's why it's actually hard to find a really good AAA single-player game anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I think we had a lot of great ones this past year. You know, God of War, Assassin's Creed, Spider-Man, Red Dead. But yeah, those are 5 years in the making for each of those. And it's
huge,
a lot of money.
Huge
investment. So everyone making those wants some legs with DLC, with an online mode. Another funny thing or interesting thing with Red Dead is that Rockstar and Take-Two are being sued by, of all people, the Pinkerton Detective Agency. They're historically real detective agency. They are one of the villains in Red Dead Redemption 2. And
like bashing of the name.
I guess so. Even though the agency has been portrayed in other media before as villains.
Weird.
Yeah.
Is this just a money grab?
It could be.
Are you going to play Red Dead Online Battle Royale?
I can't play anything. But if I had time,
yes,
I would. I would.
Nap time.
Yeah. That's my nap time. GameStop. You got that right? Yep. GameStop. Their buyout is expected.
It's a rumor. Like, we don't even know that there's definitely going to be a buyout. But IGN is reporting that we think there will be. It's looking like there will be a buyout of GameStop, and there's two companies vying for it. My question is, would you want to own a brick-and-mortar video game store?
Yeah, what is the...
If you're Amazon, yes.
They were down last year. They had a good last quarter, but it's the holiday quarter.
But what are you buying?
Well, I guess when's the last time you went to a GameStop?
I go there to sell my games. I do that.
Wow. Because
then you get a store credit.
Here's $5.
And then you can buy things with the store credit.
I bought a Wii about 5 years ago as a, you know, as a gift.
Yeah.
And that was the last time I was actually in a brick and mortar because I wanted a used Wii and I wanted to actually touch it before I bought it.
But I'm just surprised there's any kind of bidding war for this company.
But I mean, all those spaces are in malls that I know of. And yeah. I think those are just leased spaces. So it's not like there's ownership.
I think GameStop,
the brand?
For most people go to find the hardware, right? On launch day for hardware, like that's one of the few places that if you didn't, they'll price sell it online, that you can wait in line and get the hardware.
But how often is that?
Or go at
midnight. It's not very often.
No,
or midnight launches for games.
But even for games.
And if you go to a games, I think there's one next to like a ramen place I like, and I walk in while I'm waiting for a seat in the ramen, and most of it now is like physical goods like collectibles and toys. Like there's a whole thing.
It has become a new like kind of hobbyist collector.
Yeah. And the games part of it is kind of relegated.
But that's good business. Maybe that's part of it. Maybe that's the thinking on whoever's going to buy it. They're going to roll more into the merchandise sector.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, so many people buy directly digitally and download.
The problem with that is you can't return them. You can't exchange them.
That's true.
You're all in. Like it's yours now.
If the next generation of consoles makes it even harder to...
Right, physical media.
For physical media to have a gray market and an aftermarket, then
probably will.
That's not going to be good for this company.
Yeah.
Right.
But the collector stuff, that seems to be spreading into a lot of brick and mortars. Like if you go to Barnes & Noble or any of the like booksellers, they also have a ton of that.
I want more retro stuff, like honestly. Like Target has the retro games aisle cap. You know, like that's what they've dedicated their.
What
entire
do you mean by retro games?
You know, anything that having to do with like Nintendo and Sega and game consoles,
but
and
actual
arcade games from the '80s, just any kind of merchandise that features those old properties. Mm-hmm. And so, I would love to see that more in GameStop.
Anything on one of Jeremy's T-shirts?
Exactly. They have like the Funko Pop, have the 8-bit line, you know, things like that.
I mean, I think Atari, as we know, is a big licensing brand now. They are in Target and they are in GameStop.
Yeah.
Why do you need brick and mortar for that though? Just because it's
like anything else in brick and mortar, you like to browse.
I like to touch it.
You like to see it in person.
Yeah. Yeah. But whether you'll buy. I mean, there are exclusives. That's sometimes they'll work out deals and with ThinkGeek and have an exclusive in-store only to get you in the store. And there are a lot of peripherals. I mean, you need that controller. You know, people are impatient. Like, two-day delivery used to be good enough. Now I'd rather go to the mall and get it day of if I want to
play
Smash Bros.
Prime now, baby. Prime now.
I did the Amazon same-day thing where you have to go pick it up in Berkeley.
Oh, wait, on campus.
On campus.
Yes.
ACSC.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's Student Union
building.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it was great because they're not actually in session. So it was completely empty. It was a ghost
town. Across the bridge to pick up something?
It was on a Sunday and there was no traffic.
Why isn't there one? And this is a Bay Area problem. Why isn't there one in San Francisco?
It's because I wanted it same day and it was the only option. It was to repair a 3D printer thing and I was freaking out. So I needed to go get it.
And it wasn't on Prime Now.
No. This is a weird thing. A little weird pulley bearing. But
this is a logistics problem that they just haven't solved yet.
I want to know where the distribution factory is or facility is because they could get it there by 9 a.m. no matter what time I ordered it the day before. So it's got to be like really close. They must have a huge warehouse somewhere near Berkeley.
I think in the Central Valley they have a big one. So then they just truck it over.
You don't think it's closer?
Where would it be?
Maybe they go in the middle
of the night. And it's funny because that's different from the inventory in Prime Now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which is in the Dog Patch area.
Yeah. I'd like to see that warehouse.
Because that's like a subset of what you would find.
Right. But a very small subset.
Yes, but still very...
bunch of bestsellers.
We found some like random stuff we needed for model making projects.
Really?
We got it the same day, and it was like, it was better than going to Target to pick it up.
Wow.
Anyway, I would like to know from people what they get at GameStop, or when's the last time you've been. Remember when it was EB Games, Electronics Boutique?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
I remember Babbage's.
Babbage's.
Yeah.
Right next to Walden Books.
Walden Books.
Yeah.
More the bookstores. I mean, Barnes & Noble's won't survive, but like Brentano's.
Oh, yeah.
Was a bookstore. B. Dalton.
Hastings. That was the music bookstore in my town.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All these retail outlets, everything. The one that I remember fondly, Suncoast Media. Do you remember Suncoast? I think it was owned by Paramount. And it was like a place to buy movies and movie posters.
Hmm.
And they have one at a local mall. I think there might be still be like one left. What, Suncoast? Anyway, all right, let's move on to our... Oh, here's before we go into a subset of tech.
Okay.
One last interesting story.
Yeah.
Motherboard has a story about a guy who built a computer into...
Mm-hmm.
A mouse.
This makes perfect sense. This is right in line with the Atari built into the Atari 20 joystick. And, you know, the Commodore built into the Commodore joystick.
So it's a 3D printed mouse chassis.
Yeah.
The size of a mouse, two button mouse. So it's three, I guess, with a scroll wheel.
Which doubles as a PC case.
And yes. And so inside that is a Raspberry Pi.
Figured.
With
probably
attached
the small one, the Pi W or something.
I don't know.
Pi Zero.
Pi
Zero
W. Yeah.
And then on the front of the mouse.
Yeah.
There's a hinged screen. Uh-huh. Like it looks like a one-inch screen. And on the left side, there's a tiny keyboard that you can use activate with your thumb.
The size of the screen is irrelevant. Like, he could hook that up to a HDMI monitor.
I think the idea was that it was going to be self-contained.
Does the screen move with the mouse?
It does.
It's all attached.
You can't read that.
And that's the funny thing. It turns out that the mouse is sensitive enough that you're just doing micro movements with the mouse. And so you can't actually see the cursor.
On the one-inch screen.
On the one-inch screen.
That's funny.
As an exercise.
I think this makes a lot. I mean, it's obviously not practical, but it's a good joke. I like this.
Yes. The tiny keyboard is the thing I can't get over. Like, I don't like that thumb.
No.
I think he actually flipped the keyboard 180. He's like, he has the space bar away too far from the thumb. I think it needs to be facing his thumb.
Did he release the design? Can anybody build this?
This is from Electronic Grenade is the YouTuber who designed it. I don't think the design is out there.
Not on Thingiverse yet.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Last segment in tech. Subsegment.
And so we enter Elon's shower.
Hi, Kishore.
Some Tesla news out this week. Interesting announcement last week. Elon announced that Tesla will stop selling the 75 kilowatt hour Model S and Model X cars.
It wasn't too long ago that he discontinued the 60 kilowatt hour battery.
Yeah, so
moving
if you,
on up.
If you see a Tesla and then you don't know how the designations work, typically in the back of the car, when you see the number, that's the size of the battery.
Mm-hmm.
So 60, they replaced that with a 75.
What does the P mean?
The P means performance.
Which means?
It means you have the better all-wheel.
That's the D.
Oh, you're right. So I think you can only get the P if you have the D. So you can get like 100, which is 100 kilowatt hour, and 100D, which is the dual motor, and then the P100D.
What does P mean?
It's just a software upgrade that gets you better acceleration.
Yeah. It's software?
It's software.
Purely software.
Because, yeah, you can just upgrade it. You just pay it after the fact.
Like literally, if you buy the Model 3 and you buy the P performance version,
yeah,
it costs like $15,000 more, and the car doesn't even come with a P there. You have to sticker it on yourself.
Wait. For a while, it was actually, there was a fuse, I think, or some. There was some piece that they had to install, but I think nowadays it is purely software.
It's a bit.
Yeah, flip it.
I don't think they can get away with that designation, the numbering, for long, because I don't think
it doesn't scale.
It doesn't scale, exactly, and the ranges differ. A 100 kilowatt hour.
Kilowatts doesn't mean anything.
Doesn't mean anything for the type of car you have between the three models they currently have.
Right.
I think one of the reasons is they want to definitely start slimming down their SKUs. And the Model 3 is only at the 75 kilowatt hour, I believe, currently. Because there is a mid-range one they sell, but it's the same battery. They just don't have they don't activate the cells.
Right.
Mm.
It's interesting because everyone's anticipating a refresh.
So what does this mean? What's left?
I think,
is it 90 and 100?
I think 90 and 100.
Okay.
Yeah. They want people to pay more. They want the upsell.
When you say refresh, are you saying new 75s or something higher than 100?
I think the S and the X are due for interior redesign.
But yeah. they continually update them. It's not like...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So
yes.
There's
no
not like
2019 it's, model, 2018
exactly,
model.
Exactly.
They've only done that once, I think, when they did a whole body refresh on the Model S's, where, you know, before they had the radar dish,
yeah,
the black bulbous thing, which looked really ugly, and now they're just flush.
Right.
And so that was a big physical redesign. And I think because of the success of the Model 3 touchscreen-only interface, the next step will probably be that interface
on
for
the
Model S and X,
yeah,
which I'm happy for because it works, surprisingly.
Zach owns, drives an electric car, you know. It's electric for a while.
Well, we all do at this table. We all
that's
have.
Right. We are electric.
Yeah, I've got the hybrid, but it's a series hybrid. So, you know, I get my 50 miles of range. You get, what are you getting these days on with your Bolt?
It's gone down. Like whenever I'm fully charged, it used to say 230, and now it's down to like 200.
No,
so
it's been 2 years.
But temperature also plays into that. So okay. Charge temperature, I know, yeah, at least on my Volt, you know, in the wintertime, an overnight charge will only get me to like 48. But then in the summertime, when it's warm throughout the night,
yeah,
I get up to 53. And it's actually held for the last 3 years.
That's interesting. I'm curious, like, how accurate that is. I haven't actually recorded my mileage.
Sure.
That'd be interesting.
Hmm.
But your car, the Volt was discontinued. Has the value of it, like, skyrocketed?
Nobody's like, called and asked to buy it yet.
Oh, shoot.
I'm waiting. Much like, you know, Norm's Nikes in the future.
Right.
I'm hoping it just increases.
Investment for the baby.
The U.S. Department of Transportation, when they go back into business, they've implemented the quiet car rule to force automakers to create noises for pedestrians to realize that electric cars are driving near them.
This is great.
Yeah.
It's a problem you've had, backing out of your driveway.
I don't back out. I drag in because I'm super smart and I trust my navigation computer. But I definitely feel nervous pulling out. And
do you honk?
Anytime. I do. I always honk. And I'm nervous even pulling out of, you know, out of a spot. I'm nervous turning a corner and there's a pedestrian crossing.
Because
I know
they
can't
know.
Hear me.
Yeah.
It's like that Office episode where, I forget who it was, but somebody is driving a Prius and they were going to run into Rainn Wilson, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
he didn't hear it.
Like, and everyone upstairs was like, oh, as long as he stays under 5 miles an hour, it's completely silent. And that's the problem. Like, yeah, you can't hear these cars. And my car does, the Chevy Bolt, it does make a sound,
yeah,
when you're driving at slow speeds, and it sounds like a whirring fan.
Yeah, mine does too. So but the nice thing is they've tuned it so that if your windows are up, like, I don't hear it if I don't have my windows rolled down.
Yeah.
So it's loud enough on the outside to hear it, but And to be fair, I mean, even silent electric cars, unless you're really just creeping, they make noise. I mean, there's tire noise, there's gear noise, there's a whole bunch of things going on. It's just, they're not silent.
It's just right. What people expect.
Yeah. Yes.
It's the mindset and the expectation, what people are used to.
Right.
And so there is, I mean, the problem with this type of this legislation is that there's no standard for how that's implemented. Right.
Oh, now. There's no standard for how much noise it needs to make in terms of decibels or anything?
Yeah. And so you get potential noise pollution. And under Model 3s in the front, there's some that have the speaker grill, and there's mounting ports on the inside, and there will be a speaker. And I think Elon Musk said that his vision for how this will be solved will be some kind of pedestrian awareness, of course, touting the computer vision of his own cars, and then
make a noise.
Directional sound even.
Mm.
So only in the
I think the they pedestrians. Should just go full Jetson sounds and just make all cars.
Oh my God, that would be great. Let's do that.
We can do it.
I love this idea.
Are you sure? Are you sure you love this idea?
I love it.
The audioscape of the future.
That's it. Instead of ringtones, you have drive tones.
This is great. Mm. Are they going to retrofit old cars, or is this just new ones?
I think just new ones.
Okay.
Yeah.
You don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Tesla's also now selling, they started selling a new plug-in wall charger, which is an interesting thing they're going to sell. It looks like the kind of wall charger you would buy that you would have an electrician install next to your breaker. And anyone who buys an electric car, you need to have some way of charging it. You can buy, and some cars come with, a adapter for your 240 like laundry outlet.
Mm-hmm.
And this is essentially that. No electrician needed. You plug it in, four-prong, which is the standard NEMA 1450 plug. The thing is that Teslas come with that already. They come with a version of that. 40-amp charger. Mine came with that. And it's supposed to be your emergency charger. It doesn't hang on the wall or anything. But it just takes in from the wall. And from the 40-amp outlet, you get like 32 amps of charging.
Who needs two of these?
Well, the idea is that you're only supposed to have... You're supposed to keep that in your car at all times.
Okay.
Best practice.
Ah.
And so you need something for your home. I, unfortunately, do not
keep it. It's convenience.
Hey, Jeremy, how many iPhone chargers do you have?
You mean lightning cables?
And cables.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like, so this is them taking advantage of the accessory market.
You don't think it's possible they're going to stop including this?
I think it also could be leading to that. It's $500, which is the same price as the higher 60-amp electrician install required one. And it could be a stepping stone.
Didn't they also just reduce the price of the S and X after the federal tax rebate ceased?
Yeah, to compensate for...
A little bit.
Not the full difference, but some of it.
Yeah.
So maybe that's to offset that.
Oof. I mean, I guess it's a viable option if you don't want to pay for an electrician. A lot of people don't want to do that.
Well, and if you have a plug that has 50 amps out, then...
40 amps, yeah.
Or 40 amps, then right. you're close.
The Chevys just come with a 120 volt adapter, you know.
Yeah.
So that could be their direction too.
It's just I think they would have to.
Yeah, they'd have
as
to
a bare minimum. But that's like overnight charging,
or more.
Multiple day charging.
Yes.
They get a full charge overnight to get you out of the driveway.
Well, if you're completely empty.
Tesla, of course, also has one last bit of news. They have their network of superchargers, right? Which I think is a huge asset to the company, but. Recently, they've been iced. Have you heard of this? The icing.
Yeah, I know about this. You know about this, Zach?
No, I have not heard this
icing.
One.
Icing. Guess what icing stands for?
Putting bling on it?
ICE.
Internal combustion engine. So Tesla or electric car owners, and I'm going to say just Tesla owners.
No, it is Tesla owners because it's also happening at superchargers.
Well, I'm saying like the name icing.
Oh, okay.
The name ice, right? Like electric car owners refer to... traditional gas cars as ICE vehicles,
right?
Internal combustion engine vehicles. Yeah. And at the superchargers, over the holiday break especially, a lot of people started posting pictures that, the superchargers are getting full because people are going, there are a lot more of these cars out there, and there are lines of people. Tesla has systems in place to charge you more money if you idle there and are not charging,
right?
Just to get the throughput. But also... some of these locations, they're renting them. They're like in the backs of hotels, right? Like off the highway hotels. They used to have a part of the parking lot. People are parking their F-150s and their big pickup trucks across multiple lanes to block the cars from charging. And that is known as icing. When someone driving a big car wants to troll the Tesla supercharger and just put their car there and block the charging spots. Now, Tesla obviously doesn't like this.
This fills me with a bad feeling. I don't like this.
And
it's a weird way to enforce parking.
It's a weird way to express yourself. It's a dick move.
It 100% is a dick move. Yeah. And in many cases, the people who are looking for charging spots have there's no recourse, right? Like they're not sitting in the cars. Like there's no local authority, right? And sometimes they'll go to like the hotel manager and find out, you know, who has the rights to the parking spots, and they'll call the police or something.
Why is it any different than I know it's different than a handicap spot, but there's other like 20 minute only or loading only why can't somebody just get a ticket?
I think you can
get a
ticket, but it's still a massive inconvenience.
Yeah.
Regardless. I think it's all on private property. Right?
Sure.
Tesla's experimenting with a system to have a little roadblock in place that springs up when no cars are there.
Well, this is a Tesla thing, right?
Tesla's experimenting with
this.
And that there will be some type of detection with QR codes or an app.
No, it's an app. You have to engage it with WeChat.
Unlock the spot,
right?
And then the roadblock flips back down.
Yeah.
That's an opportunity for someone to hack it and to destroy and to damage batteries. When you're parked there.
You don't even need to hack it. You just need it to malfunction.
Right.
This is bad.
It's not a great solution.
No. And it still doesn't keep people from parking their motorcycle in front of it.
Or blocking the front of it.
Or an F-150, because these are 12 inches tall.
Yeah.
Yeah, these are probably pieces of plastic to an F-150.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's an odd one.
There is actually a website. I learned about this on Ryan McCaffrey's Tesla podcast.
Ride the Lightning.
There's a legislation reference for reserve parking for plug-in vehicles. And if you go to pluginsites.org or just Google it, you can find the legislation reference and you can find a state-by-state rundown of what the recourse is in your state if you find somebody parked in an EV spot icing you and your EV brethren.
It's going to be a reality going forward.
Yeah.
It's going to be contentious.
And it's a transition.
Haters going to hate.
For the next...
Growing pains.
Yep.
You know, until, I guess, Tesla releases the pickup truck.
Yeah.
Right? The EV pickup truck.
Yeah.
And then you have the daywalker, the one that can walk through both worlds.
I think there'll still be contention.
Isn't
the
that...
The ones you, unite our worlds.
You, that's you. You can...
I can walk in both.
You're nice.
I am.
When you park in an EV spot, you're nice.
I am.
Yeah.
Though I have been known to just charge because I need a parking space. I pay for charging like anybody else, but hey, it's front row parking.
As long as you're not using the free charging spots. Just because those are scarce.
I discovered there's two more at Stonestown underground. Did you know about
that? Nordstrom? Oh no! At the below the
Don't tell anybody about
them. Sorry, don't tell anybody.
It's on the podcast now. I'm not editing this one out. All right. So before we move to our next segment, I want to thank the other sponsor that makes this episode possible, and that's Caseta by Lutron. Caseta takes your smart speaker, Alexa, Google Home, Apple HomePod, and makes it more powerful by letting you control your lights with your voice. Caseta is the most connected smart lighting brand, and it works with more smart home devices than any other smart lighting brand, letting you pair your lights with things like security devices, thermostats, and music systems like Nest, Sonos, and more. And because it's from Lutron, you can rest easy knowing it'll just work. We use the system in our nursery so we can activate the lights and dim the lights specifically for nap time for our little baby because our hands are full with the bottle, the baby, and sometimes even the dog. Get smart lighting the smart way with Caseta by Lutron. Search for Caseta, that's Caseta, or check out Lutron.com to learn more. Caseta by Lutron, welcome home to peace of mind.
Moment of science.
Kishore is listening to this thinking, what?
I know.
Why are we doing science without Kishore?
Science still exists.
Zach told me about a story that I didn't know about.
Oh, yeah.
Well, have the Chinese colonized the moon?
they're trying to, but they got foiled by, the fact that there's a 14-day night period.
Did we even talk about the fact they landed there?
We did.
Okay.
We did.
Yes.
And so, yes, China has landed. And in cooperation with NASA, there was some information shared. This is great for space exploration. This is essential. They sent a lander to the far side of the moon, and there also was an experiment. So this is, I think, super cool. They had cotton seeds.
They actually had a couple different seeds. They had a variety pack to see what would grow.
Now, were these, did they, seeds ever mix with the moon dust? Or
No, this was all in a sealed, it had its own little environment.
So they did not grow them technically on the moon,
so
not colonized.
I mean, they didn't dig a hole in the moon surface and plant a seed.
Right.
That would
no atmosphere.
So they brought along a little, you know, biosphere. I think they even had like a fruit fly or fruit flies in it. I forget, but they actually didn't hatch. And unfortunately, the only thing that grew was a cotton seed out of the mix of seeds that they have.
This was contained inside the rover, inside the lander.
Inside the lander. There's a little camera, so they actually could see a little sprout
That's
growing
amazing.
On there, which
That's
is
neat.
Wonderful.
That's neat.
Though this experiment was really only good for 2 weeks because they landed at the beginning of the lunar day, which is a 14-day cycle, and it is now night on the dark side of the moon or the far side of the moon. And the temperatures drop to -170°C, and they're not expending resources to keep it warm.
Yeah.
They're literally just keeping the lights on enough to take some temperature readings and some really minor, you know, just barely trickling along because of the temperature being so cold. And then they're in what they call sleep mode, and it, in theory, will wake back up and 14 days and carry on, but unfortunately nobody expects the seeds or fruit fly eggs to survive. So it was a short experiment, but to prove that it could survive the trip and the radiation exposure and, you know, relatively extreme conditions, though they did bring along a lot of the, you know, what's required.
Very deep.
I would think the first thing to ever grow on the moon.
I think that is true.
Not grow in the moon.
Right. Yeah. What do you?
It's a big difference.
You don't expect that, do you?
It's like the Vision lifting Thor's hammer.
The VR Minute. Virtual reality this week.
Why? Why what?
Why is it like the Vision?
It's because it's about nitpicking the details. You know, in Avengers Age of Ultron, the Vision was able to lift Thor's hammer,
and so he was deemed worthy. And then there was a fun discussion at the end of the film.
Uh-huh.
Well, if the hammer is on an elevator, and the elevator goes up, is the elevator worthy? what constitutes lifting the hammer?
Right.
Right? And so this is just, did it actually grow on the moon, or is it just because it's
on the lander
that's on the surface?
Yeah.
Or does it count as growing?
Because I imagine they grow things all the time on the ISS.
They do.
So it's just,
they actually eat. Yeah. I read they eat some of the lettuce that was grown on the ISS. So even one step further.
Yum.
I just wanted to bring it back to comics.
Yeah, of course.
I understand.
All right, VR. I know. So let's talk about news. Okay. So not a lot of news.
So we this is not necessarily like a news release, but Reddit user Van Fanel. One car noted that if you do the translation of a Japanese website, it seems that one of the Oculus reps at CES casually stated that the Go was the first headset for 80% of the owners. I guess that's not really a big surprise because of
what
the
does that even mean, though?
Because of the price point. What it means to me is that price is a huge factor in VR adoption.
Are they talking about potential owners or the ones that already? Because when they say owners, that means that they've already bought it.
Yes. So for 80% of the people who own an Oculus Go, they don't own a different VR headset.
That's their only
VR
headset.
It's the first VR headset for 80% of the owners. So to me, that's good because it speaks to maybe the future of adoption, maybe one of the hurdles, simply being a matter of price, and that will naturally come down.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting statistic.
Well, it's also interesting that isn't it doesn't bring people into the VR kind of ecosystem. It doesn't say, okay, well, I've tried the cheaper one. Now I'm going to spend more on a fancier system.
What do you mean it doesn't?
Well, if 80% this is their
yeah
their VR headset,
it's, it was their first.
Oh, just their first.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily mean,
doesn't mean they're only. Yeah. Okay.
And everyone, if you were to have that conversation with anybody who follows this stuff, they would all say, well, just hold off for the quest.
Right.
Because that's going to be $400 and still all in one with 6 degrees of freedom.
Unrelated to this, we also had an update from our friends at Big Screen. They announced that there's going to be a massive update to Big Screen VR. This is the app that lets you mirror your desktop to your VR headset, whether it's a tethered headset or even the wireless headset. And there's a version for the Oculus Go and presumably Oculus Quest when that comes out. But Big Screen beta will have a big update over the next 3 months. They've led off by saying avatars will be updated, big new avatar design system. Neat, but I'm hoping for more improvements on the streaming quality and the mobile performance.
Do you guys ever use VR for productivity? Like, do you type emails?
No,
do you ever
no.
do any?
I know Microsoft really wants you to do that when they did their Windows Mixed Reality launch. Like, you could use Outlook and email and,
right.
and Edge browser in VR. But I do, you know, desktop mirroring, like, as a side feature when I'm in a game.
Just to check to see if somebody's messaged you or...
Yes.
I think the reason they pitched those features is because they know that's the vision. Yeah. Eventually, we'll be doing that.
But eventually, I think you're using something dedicated, made for VR, and you're switching your desktop as a second screen, essentially. It's like looking at your phone while you're doing something.
I mean, not until the screens have the fidelity of a monitor would I ever want to do that. Like, that's... It's not convenient.
Yep.
It's... I go into VR for things I can't do on the PC better.
And also not just the screens, but the interface, right?
Right.
Keyboard, mouse, right? You still need some type of way.
I don't want to use... Poking at
laser
that
pointer
is painful.
Not, yeah. I mean, video content, I mean, that's best right now. It's kind of a stopgap way, right? To pull up YouTube and pull up Vimeo and watch stuff through a virtual desktop on a virtual screen.
Is that something that you do? Do you watch YouTube 2D YouTube in VR?
On the go. Yeah,
okay.
On the go, I'll watch
like
watch
while you're traveling.
Yes, But on the desktop, I'm happy with fidelity on my computer screen or on my laptop.
I tried to watch Bandersnatch on the go, and you can't natively. You have to use virtual desktop. But natively, if you try to do it, it says you have to do this on a portable Android device, which is exactly what I'm doing. But yeah. Small market, I guess. Even if it's 80% of the people who bought them, it's their first headset. The Motley Fool also had an interesting article called Virtual Reality Will Take Big Steps Forward in 2019.
This is a business.
It is. Right? It's an investing website. And I'm glad to hear that people are aware of this. They don't exactly get it right, the difference between the Quest and the new HTC headset, the Cosmos. But they are aware that these are coming. And they had an interesting... statistic by way of NVIDIA, which is NVIDIA has said that there's 4 million PC VR headsets in the wild.
That sounds about right.
Which is across all three of the majors, you know, Oculus and HTC and Windows.
It's a far cry from saturation.
And Sony has almost as many. They have 3 million of the PSVR headsets that are out there. So that's 7 million. Now, honestly, that is a low number. That's even 7 million.
So this argues, you know, to every developer, why would they spend?
Yeah, exactly.
Multiple years.
There's no money.
There's no money in
yet. It. Chicken and egg. This is what excites me about VR, though. Like, how much innovation, how much more excitement is there left in your phone or your television at this point? If you have a current generation, you know, phone, there's like nothing left to do that's really going to improve the experience dramatically. Really, even in a modern day PC gaming box, like, what do you like? Is real time ray tracing gonna give you what the next generation of VR is gonna give you in terms of experience? I don't think so. So the VR space right now is exciting to me because there's only 7 million people who own the thing, and because the technology is so obviously
because there's
ripe
room for improvement.
For improvement, yeah. I'm excited.
Also left over from CES, a couple of display technologies that were demonstrated. Rode VR has impressions on a light field display developed by former CERN scientists. This company is called C-Real 3D, and it's not a headset. It is literally a display. It looks binocular with one eye.
A telescope?
Binocular?
Monocular?
Monocular?
A monocular? Telescope?
I'm going with telescope. Monocular is like what the Monopoly guy wears, right?
No, that's,
that's a monocle.
Monocle.
Oh, that's a monocle, yeah.
I'm going to call it a monocular.
I
don't think that's a real word. Is that a real word? Someone Google. It looks like a half a binocular.
It's a telescope. It's a telescope.
Or a microscope. It looks like the lens of a microscope that you put your eye in, and apparently it's a light field display, and Ben over at RoadDVR says that it solves convergence accommodation without using eye tracking, without being a varifocal, because it's light field. And he said it was the most impressive implementation of light field display that he had seen so far. There's some video captured from the device, filmed through the lens, and with the focus changes, it looks like it could be convincing. But
I think this is why Magic Leap kept stuff under wraps for so long, because when you look at these kind of demos and you go, is that somehow going to translate to something that I'd want to wear? It's hard for most people to make that leap.
And can it be miniaturized?
Right.
Like, that's the big question. Do the physics allow for this type of display to miniaturize? Or is it going to be
a big black box?
Virtual Boy. Mounted on a tripod.
Stick right, your head on, in
and
this.
Put your head in. Yeah, exactly. Right. No head tracking needed whatsoever. next month is also Mobile World Congress. And reports are that Microsoft will be on hand to potentially announce HoloLens 2.
Oh, good. You know they have HoloLens just in the Microsoft store?
Yeah.
You know, you can just go try it
yeah.
on.
Yeah. Have you done it?
I did, and it was turned off.
I'm so sorry.
Like, I put it on my head. Oh. Nobody came over to help me.
Oh. So, HoloLens, there was supposed to be a second version of HoloLens that was canned, because I think based on the feedback from the first one, both price points and usage and developers, Microsoft smartly realized that this was not ready to be a consumer product yet.
Yeah.
But I think with the launch of Magic Leap being at least widely available to consumers, and with their big developer ecosystem so far, you know, relatively speaking, making entertainment products and real consumer products, Microsoft feels like it might be time to get back in to show that they were there first and they have not stopped working on this.
It feels very Google Glass to me, where it's like it got released, it became this kind of odd thing, and, you know,
it was the first to market, but they didn't have any first mover advantage.
Yeah, there's right? nothing. So, I mean, in fact, I think at this point, it's almost, you know, a detriment to most of these technologies to be the first, because you don't learn anything.
Right. Right. And their, you know, their foray into Windows Mixed Reality, which they spent a bunch of money on, subsidized so much of those headsets. They're good headsets. They work. It's just that it hasn't put any kind of foothold for them, given them any foothold in VR in that, you know, up to 7 million user base. Although I still recommend those headsets. You know,
if you for the price.
For the price.
Yeah. Yeah,
and the resolution.
Make. Especially at this point in the life cycles.
Yep. Yep. That's it for this week's podcast, I think. Zach, anything you want to promote? Anything you've been working on?
Oh, nothing that requires promotion. But I'm just still making lots of stuff and
cool stuff.
Big batteries, little batteries, flying machines, walking machines, all sorts of stuff.
Flying machines.
Yeah. Big drones.
People, if they want to utilize your expertise can
sure.
find you.
What
at,
are your expertise?
Oh,
Zach,
I don't claim I'm an expert in anything.
Oh, you're modest.
I work on lots of things, so I have breadth, not depth, as what I usually say. But I have knowledge about lots of things.
A universal competent.
There you go. Yep. If people want to find me, buildcoolstuff.com is my website, and all my contact info is on there. Occasionally post on Twitter, occasionally post on Instagram, but for the most part, Build Cool Stuff's the easiest way to get
you
me.
Occasionally post on Thingiverse.
Even do that.
Yep.
Even do that.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us this week.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
We'll be back next week with another episode.
Who are you on Twitter, Norm?
I'm at Enchan. You're at Jerware.
That's right.
And the other guy, Kishore, well, we don't need to promote him. He'll be back to promote himself next week. Thanks for listening. We have an outro.
Justin, aka Speed, come through again.
Hi there, I didn't see you.
That's it.
There are kite flying clubs out there that are like, I've been telling you, man.
Less resistance.
I knew it. Wind isn't what it was.
Putting your
man.
Finger in the air, licking your finger, put in the air.
That's it.
See ya.